Flashback to being in the thick of the global pandemic. The timely access to vaccines became an unexpected pressure point on our healthcare system. Lines were blurred between various stakeholders as they scrambled to coordinate, leaving many pondering, how could a system under strain respond effectively to such an immediate crisis? As the stakes rose, the challenge was not only about delivering care, but also about providing credible information, ensuring interoperability, and safeguarding patient experiences. It was a pivotal moment that called for rapid innovation combined with strategic collaboration. So what does it take for government bodies and healthcare vendors to put aside traditional boundaries and work together swiftly for the greater good? And how do we measure the actual impact of these partnerships? And what can we learn from their successes and hurdles? Well, on the show today, Sophie Turner from Talking Health Tech speaks with Travis Hodgson from Health Direct Australia, Aaron D'Souza from MedAdvisor, and Anish Kalpakam from HotDoc. And in this episode, we talk about the origin and evolution of the Vaccine Clinic Finder and its transition to encompass wider healthcare appointment facilitation, the intricacies of building and leveraging existing technology amongst rapidly evolving public health strategies, and we consider the vast potential for future projects harnessing the collective strengths of government and health tech industries. Collaboration starts with a conversation, Team Health Tech. Let's make it happen. Between now and the end of June, we're conducting the 2024 Talking Health Tech Audience Survey. This helps us prioritise content, hone in key messages, and refine the show to make it even better. We also want to understand who the biggest cohorts of our audience are. So I'd love for you to take 5 or 10 minutes to have your say and complete the survey. Everyone who completes it goes in the draw to win a share of $1,000 worth of THT Plus membership credits to put towards a membership for yourself as an individual or to help get the word out about your company. The link to complete the survey is in the show notes of this episode, or just go to talkinghealthtech.com/survey.
Welcome to Talking Health Tech, featuring content and community about technology and healthcare. We acknowledge the traditional owners of lands these conversations were recorded and pay respect to elders past and present.
Welcome to today's episode of Talking Health Tech. I am Sophie Turner, your host today, and today I'm joined by three dynamic and energetic guys from Health Direct, HotDoc, and MedAdvisor Solutions. I'm going to throw to them to introduce themselves and tell us a little bit about who they are and what they do. Do you want to start us off, Travis?
Thanks very much, Sophie. Travis Hodgson, Chief Operations Officer at Health Direct Australia. It's great to be here, particularly with our colleagues Anish and Aaron. I look after services and engagement at Health Direct, so that's both our platform services as well as those that we deliver in partnership with industry and service providers. That's the Health Information and Advice Service, the core Health Direct service, which supports more than 2 million Australians each year with seeking health information, advice, and connection to care, as well as the My Aged Care service, video call service, pregnancy, birth, and baby service, and the Head to Health service.
Great. Thank
Lovely.
You.
Thanks,
and
Travis.
Aaron.
Hi, my name's Aaron D'Souza. I'm a pharmacist and I work at MedAdvisor Solutions, where I help the federal governments and agencies, as well as state governments, deliver healthcare programs across a network of about 5,800 community pharmacies across the country. And we also have a patient medication app. So we have that connection into the consumer domain. We have bookings. And what it results in is an integrated and diversified, differentiated system of clinical information systems, as well as patient communication systems, so that we can connect the community at a local level through to federal digital health initiatives such as electronic prescribing and, of course, the wonderful Health Direct bookings integration as well.
Amazing. Anish?
Thanks, Sophie. Hi, I'm Anish. I'm the head of partnerships at HotDoc. And for those of you who have used HotDoc, HotDoc's historically been a patient engagement platform. And over the years, we've transitioned from patient engagement to optimizing front desk operations. And now we really are focusing on innovating how we can connect the 21,000 GPs and 11 million patients that interact with us to another level. And our North Star is always ensuring that patients' healthcare needs are met through HotDoc. And, you know, the best way we can do this is by helping GPs work more efficiently.
Thank you. So we've got quite a fun little bunch to have a conversation today. Travis, can you tell me a little bit about how these collaborations came about and what events led to you guys working with HotDoc and MedAdvisor Solutions?
Sure. Thanks, Sophie. The genesis of the Health Direct Service Finder, it actually came about in response to the pandemic, specifically the vaccination campaign. Initially, the call to action from government around early 2020, January, was to stand up a national hotline, the National Coronavirus Helpline, capable of taking tens of thousands of calls a day, supporting consumers with health information and advice, understanding and navigating the ever-changing restrictions, eligibility in relation to the vaccinations that were on the horizon, and general health information, advice, and medical escalation. In those early days, we surged the contact centre, reaching more than 40,000 consumers a day with inbound contact centre calls. But we quickly realised that digital information and access channels could help to reduce not only that contact centre burden, but could scale rapidly across the population to support consumers and empower consumers searching for that information at any time of the day from any location. So in partnership with industry, and particularly our colleagues here today, I remember being in the trenches, particularly with Aaron, in those early days of identifying what suite of tools can we partner on designing and delivering rapidly to the community to support them in this search and access of information. But secondly, as the government were able to procure and get access to and distribute vaccines, get those jabs in arms as quickly as possible and move beyond the initial phase of the pandemic. We realised that the NHSD had a significant offering. So part of the principle of this program was to leverage existing infrastructure wherever possible. There are a range of challenges as well as opportunities in those early days of repurposing the National Health Services Directory to support the infrastructure components of the Vaccine Clinic Finder, and we'll talk about some of those today. But essentially, the Vaccine Clinic Finder became a digital front door to the healthcare system for consumers looking for vaccination information and where to get access and also health information to support them in their journey throughout the COVID period. The VCF, the Vaccine Clinic Finder, it's now transitioned into the Health Service Finder. It's been used by more than 50 million times since 2020, and it's supported more than 2 million Australians getting access to vaccine appointments. So it's a significant enduring component of national digital health infrastructure.
Thanks for that, Travis. That's a great overview. I'm sure there were a lot of targeted benefits, and I'd love to know more about how this was achieved. Anish, can you tell me a little bit about that from your perspective at HotDoc?
Absolutely. Thanks, Sophie. The best way to describe this is almost to paint a bit of a picture. In the early days, of the COVID panic, patients would be calling in to the front desk. There'd be a lot of walk-ins. And as a result, it just led to a lot of GPs and nurses in the front desk being overworked and exhausted. So we got a call, and just like Aaron and other private vendors in the industry, got a knock from the government and effectively asked, hey, we need to build a number of features to help with this process. And what that led to was helping some of these nurses and GPs manage their loads and also send them home and keep them safe, most importantly. And this was really just emphasized with the integration of Health Direct. It allowed for patients to be triaged appropriately, making sure that patients are seeing the right appointments for the right vaccine types, capturing consent. All these factors were vital through that phase. The second benefit that I could think of, COVID really created this pressure cooker of an environment where public and private were forced to work together. And what that happened and what that led to was a really collaborative environment where all of us could deliver something that was previously unattainable. And, you know, as a result, it's really set up the foundations for all of us to function in a cohesive unit, hopefully to work towards a more interoperable future.
Thanks, Anish. Aaron, do you have anything to add to that from your perspective?
Yeah, similar to what Anish has described there, it's about the narrative. I mean, we can talk about technology all day long, but the truth is it's about the human experience behind it and the honest facts about the situation. Everyone loves a facts guy, right? And bringing statistics into a conversation. But on average, Australians, the average Australian walks into a community pharmacy 13 times a year in a metropolitan area. 97% of people in a metropolitan area are 2.5 kilometres away from their community pharmacy. If you scream loud enough, your community pharmacist will hear you. And the luxury of being able to just go home was not there for community pharmacists and pharmacy staff, pharmacy assistants, dispensary technicians during the pandemic. In fact, what they had to do is split their workforces so that they could continue to serve their communities, could continue to be there, because pharmacy is a highly physical environment, and that accessibility part of it is part of the equation of why community pharmacies exist. So technology had to play a significant role in communication and connecting patients into their community pharmacy. They needed more connection because, of course, they couldn't leave their homes, but they still needed to get down to the pharmacy at some point to engage with their community pharmacy. And yes, Anish was correct. The exciting times of the pandemic, from a technology perspective, we were able to connect those patients through to their community pharmacy when, in fact, they didn't even know that pharmacies could do half the services that pharmacies could do. And I'll give you an example there. In 2014, I was blessed to be one of the first community pharmacists in the country to be able to immunize patients. And that was 2014. And we fast forward 8 years later, and still community pharmacy was only doing less than 19% of flu vaccinations in the country. And that during the pandemic, we saw there was a desperate need for pharmacy to be part of the vaccine rollout. And now we see that well above that 30 to 40% mark, depending on the values that you use. I told you I had a lot of facts today. So that showed that there was great demand in pharmacy, but booking a time where you could go into your community pharmacy, absolutely critical. We'll give you one more narrative. We had a pharmacy in rural New South Wales call me and say, "As I cannot get off the phone to serve customers because every minute I'm getting people asking me for X, Y, and Z. I need to actually do the work. My workforce has been split into team A and team B in case we have one person in our team who gets COVID. So we can then load balance and mitigate our risk. How do I do it?" I said, "Mate, bookings, you've got to get your bookings on. That is going to reduce your calls." And he had a thousandfold kind of decrease in his calls coming through so he could serve the community correctly, or his whole staff could serve the community correctly. That's what technology can do. That's the outcome of great technology journeys. But more importantly, this is why it was so powerful working with Health Direct, because it was done on a coordinated and national basis. We were able to get one message out. There was a door, a very clear door that you could walk through. There was no wrong door, but there was a clear door that you could walk through. And that really gave us a lot of power in the provision of great service throughout that pandemic. And really, look, it was one of the factors that broke the back of their pandemic, in my humble opinion.
Aaron, I like the point you make about no wrong door. And that narrative rings true to all of the services that Health Direct are delivering now, and indeed in our various organisations. You know, we support a variety of clients in service delivery that doesn't necessarily need to come through any particular channel. But reflecting on those early days in the response and the capability of what was essentially a vaccination eligibility checker at the time, which then took you through this basic view of the National Health Services Directory for services such as pharmacies and general practitioners, all that was exposed to the consumer was a phone number. And so it was a great solution that gave you a bit of an endpoint as to what options are available to get a jab in an arm. But of course, that then led to this significant inbound contact burden that pharmacies and others were experiencing, practice managers, et cetera. And there was a point in time where we were thinking, do we need to actually mask the numbers? Because you had this significant administrative burden that you weren't able to deliver care. So I remember getting in the room together with the various clinical and industry peak bodies and the consumer peak bodies and talking through what are the solutions that are available to us. And that's when the booking providers came to the party with some potential solutions. I remember talking, I think it was AAPM at the time, the Australian Association for Practice Managers, talking through the significant agency resources that they had to surge during that particular time of inquiry, and then the significant downward demand that they experienced when the online booking services came to light. So I think that's definitely one of the key benefits in addressing, you know, public campaign, call to action, you know, call the pharmacies and call the GPs. And of course, this was able to address some of that. But the best experience that I remember consumers telling us that they got out of this program was taking a federated directory approach, so that the service finder actually aggregated all available appointments across all major vendors across the entire health landscape. So it was a single view across the health system. So although Hotdoc had great strengths, Health Engine had great strengths and customer bases, etc., this brought it all together so that you had this platform view across the sector to determine where makes sense for you to attend, when is suitable, and what are some of those accessibility requirements and inclusivity needs as a consumer that makes sense based on your own individual preferences.
Now, I think another part of that, Travis, on the other side of it, receiving end, we didn't have to have a change management process, which basically through technology, potentially at practice managers, at pharmacy assistants, at pharmacists, I have to learn something new. No, use the software that you've got, right? Yeah. We're just going to plug into it. We've got the highways built. We don't have to rebuild the highway, right? You just keep going on that. We're just going to put a few more roads that actually flow into this highway. And I think that was it's underreported. It's really not appreciated that made a huge difference when there was enough change. We're talking punctuated change to the normal equilibrium of daily life in communities across the country. It wasn't another, and this is the human part of it, it wasn't another webinar that I had to sit on to learn another piece of software for my 15 staff members who actually serve our customers, right? So I don't have to do that. I don't have to then buy new software, or I don't have to have it installed. I don't need to worry about, you know, which browser do I have to use for this to actually work? And then let's face the truth about it. Efficiencies matter. That ability to kind of go, right, I'm going to have this information source coming from this way, but I actually do my majority of my work over here. So how do I actually, am I copy and pasting the entire time? Those things really make a difference. And the approach that was taken and that engagement about saying, hang on, what assets have we actually got across the country that are native? How do we use those? How do we harness that power and that momentum? And momentum is everything, as we know, and we can see that. You mentioned it before. It started with the vaccine clinic finder, and now it's got momentum into a range of diversified options for patients as well. And additionally, I'm sure that, you know, at Hotdoc you had the same type of experience. You were able to actually use the power of your network rapidly.
Yeah, absolutely. Just adding on to Travis's point there, I think the what I really appreciated about Health Direct's infrastructure was the ability to triage at a much earlier level than some of the booking providers and some of the other private vendors. And what I mean by that is, you know, as Travis mentioned, Health Direct historically has been a information source for a lot of patients. And what it has the ability to do is effectively triage people that are effectively in this environment where they're panicked, potentially a lot of pressure. They don't really have access to their regular healthcare professional because the healthcare professional is also nervous and they're also overworked. So realistically, they don't have the ability to contact them. And just having the ability to say, hey, this is potentially a scenario where you just need to go and read this information, or this is really important, go see your ED. Or in another case, okay, this might be a specific circumstance for you to seek care. And once you do that, obviously lead the right patient to the right healthcare provider for the right appointment type. And I think that sort of segment is really important. And, you know, we didn't get it right in the early days, but it took some time and eventually we configured that and, you know, it led to a superior patient experience eventually.
Yeah, that momentum piece and what you guys have been talking to is so important. I'd love to go back and find out, sort of dive into more of those barriers from the technology side, and then also how you address the privacy concerns, especially when we're working across so many different agencies at different levels from private to government. How did you address them in such a rapidly evolving landscape?
So I think the tricky parts for us were actually more around the policy landscape and the vaccines that were released, the multiple iterations of the vaccines. Now, obviously, we knew that COVID was going to be sort of an evolving beast, but not to the degree that it actually happened. And, you know, we had different eligibility criteria based on age, based on a number of other different variables, and the frequency of updates were quite intensive. And what that means from a technology perspective is that you have teams of developers working late hours, sometimes overnight, to deliver on the federal government, the state government's timelines. And it's not as simple as just meeting a deadline, because these changes and features have real life impact on patients, and people might be seeing the wrong appointment if some of these features aren't delivered. So that was a really tricky part for us, ensuring that we had to ship these iterations of vaccine types for the right patient type as soon as possible across our GP network. And I'm sure Aaron can empathize with that, because not every GP business is the same. Everyone is unique and how they function is quite unique. How they'd like to set up their flow is unique. So negotiating with the GP to help them set up an optimal system for them, but at the same time meeting a lot of these policy requirements, that was quite difficult. So if anything, it's just a big shout out to my, you know, amazing product and CX team. They did a fantastic job. I'm sure, you know, Aaron could probably speak the same thing. In terms of privacy and security, you know, HotDoc is SOC 2 Type 1 accredited, and we have some of the highest degree of security. So that's in the industry, in the private industry. So in terms of that, that's already been a historic component of our SaaS software. So none of that really changed. But as I was saying, it was more the policy landscape that was quite difficult for us. And I guess the final part is working with multiple different stakeholders across the industry. So you've got different government organizations, PHNs, private vendors like HotDoc and MedAdvisor, all aligned for the first time in potentially a very long time for a common goal. And that hasn't been done before. And making sure that our funding models, the way our cadence of working, we're all aligned to actually deliver this seamless service that ideally addressed the patient and the practitioner's needs. That was difficult, but we got there.
Anish, yeah, I can reflect those comments as well. I think from a society perspective, in that pandemic, there was so much uncertainty. And as human beings, what we really focused on is, okay, well, what are the points of certainty? What are the true certain things in my life? And what do we go back to? We went back to, you know, the human relationships that we had, you know, jumping online and you know, singing a song and doing, you know, a Teams meeting, of, you know, with a glass of wine and cheese with family members across the country. The points of certainty were those human connections and the people that we genuinely trusted. And I think if we bring that into this domain of technology, there was great risk that bad actors in overseas or in the country could have quite easily targeted the uncertainty and the panic, and then created an environment of danger for the average person who is just trying to get the right information at the right time with the right person. So by connecting through the federal government, who was taking the lead, and the state governments as well, in each jurisdiction taking the lead and giving points of certainty and foundational aspects, we were able, I think, to use a network of existing trusted local people, nurses, doctors, pharmacists, to be able to give people options and a sense of certainty. And if we overlay that with the job that software vendors did, and you mentioned your credentials, ISO 27001, so many software vendors go for that credentialing. There was certainty in that. There was credibility from a government perspective that, yes, I'm connecting through with a credible organization, right? So we can create pathways of safety and certainty, and then giving people true options of, actually, I'm looking at the Health Direct website, and there's a clinic I've never been to before, or a pharmacy I've never been to before. I've driven past it, but it's listed here. It must be a credible source of healthcare for me. I think that is a really important part of it. And that whole network effect that we got by saying, here is a genuine, credible government, you know, approved pathway. And guess what? It actually connects you with trusted, credible local people that you can get action from, information into action, was a really powerful tool. And alongside that, again, back to that point around using existing infrastructure, existing terms of use, existing privacy policies, existing confidentiality, and existing cybersecurity credentialing, that was a significant activator of what we were able to achieve. And when we look back at it, even though the pandemic felt like a very long time, in terms of technology development and that punctuated equilibrium, if we look back of it, it was actually a pretty short time in terms of being able to deliver something of great importance and of great impact to the community. Getting through that pandemic was pretty significant in the timeframes that we had. Travis, I'll let you take the conversation from here.
Yeah, look, you know, you talk about leveraging existing systems to the fullest extent possible. That was probably one of our major principles, design principles, wasn't it, Aaron? I think Health Direct could have, the government could have gone down the path of developing its own system, which would have been a very dangerous game to play in terms of, you know, widespread adoption, unnecessary disruption to the sector. And really, it would have been a real shame and missed opportunity to the repurposing of this infrastructure. And we'll talk a little bit later on in this cast about what does this mean for the future. But the foundations were already there. So being able to repurpose and better integrate those foundations across the network ensured that we could aggregate that to the consumer at the highest possible level so that it was empowering them to make those decisions about where they go to next and what choices they make in relation to their health and care situation. Some of the other challenges, there were many, weren't there? I'm just thinking about the top five that we overcame together. Probably from a more operational lens, some of the challenges were the evolving policy landscape meant, you know, rapid release. And I was talking to one of our product guys this morning and just queried, how many releases did we actually do? Did we ever count that? I'm sure HotDoc and Health Engine counted it. But from our perspective, we did quite a lot of changes at the eligibility lens. So this was the front layer to the vaccine clinic finder, and that was changing rapidly. You know, there were times when we did more than 10 changes in 1 week, following advice from the various advisory forums, TAGI and a couple of others, in each of the states, territories, and the Commonwealth. And those changes kept us on our toes, and we did have a 24/7 team on the digital channels as well as the contact center channels. So it meant that we had the resource scalability to flex and resolve those issues. But there was a heavy dependency on industry, and there was a huge dependency, even bigger dependency, on frontline clinicians and the technicians in pharmacy supporting them. So I do remember, there were quite a number of changes at times when it just felt like it would never stop. But together, the collaborative decision-making forums that we had established, the overwhelming participation across the sector in the decision and design forums was incredible. I don't think there were many meetings, even though the cadence was weekly, I don't think there were many design meetings that we didn't have a representative from every part of the sector, whether it was clinical peaks, consumer peaks, the Medical Software Industry Association, or vendors themselves sitting around a round table to share in the design of these solutions and make decisions together was really the strength in the model. One of the other challenges, of course, was harmonizing roadmap priorities. So obviously, although we were in a pandemic, you had other priorities as well to support the access to healthcare. The pandemic and the coronavirus, as challenging as it was, other components of the healthcare system needed to continue to operate, for which you both had pivotal roles. So ensuring that we could harmonize and prioritize what was essential between each of our organizations for this particular user journey, I think everybody took a really responsible approach to this. There was some exotic and sexy features that were on a longer-term roadmap that different vendors and Health Direct themselves had, but we all agreed that what was in the critical path to achieving this particular user outcome was pretty well harmonized across the landscape. We didn't let perfect get in the way of good.
Good. Yeah. I echo that from a vendor perspective. It was delightful and surprising to see that engagement, because it's not usual that you're working with, whether it's in the private sector or in the public sector, whether you're working with a partner, there's always friction points. And sometimes there's significant barriers, significant friction points. But it seems to be that in this situation, each other's best interests were always put, at the center of the conversation. It was a genuine win-win or no deal situation. And so for us, yes, massive roadmap problems. We always used to joke about when can we get our roadmap back, because it was like you just kind of went, all right, it's written in pencil now, and everyone's got a pencil that they can write on my roadmap. So you're actually kind of working in consultation, but that is very true. There were clear timelines which were reasonable and flexible, which is great. Like, things always happen, demands always happen from the network in software. So having that approach, I think, was a shining light of how public private partnerships can work. And I mean, it can work, because it worked, and it was so exciting and quite professionally satisfying as well. Anish, I think you had some extra comments too.
Yeah, I agree with that, Aaron. And I think just reflecting upon it, the biggest learning for HotDoc and the private and public vendors is that working towards a higher goal, in this scenario being COVID and delivering a fantastic patient experience and keeping our healthcare professionals safe, had really brought a number of different stakeholders together in a way that, yes, we had to set aside some of our roadmaps, and it also helped us prioritize what's important. And it really changes the narrative of what's important for the healthcare system in the future. And it's set up some nice foundations to potentially collaborate in the future. And using that sort of principle or sort of guardrail almost for future projects is a really good way to look to collaborate, whether it's MedAdvisor, Health Direct. Travis will likely talk about this in the next segment, but what the future looks like and how all of us can work together.
So we'll park the future for just a second, but I'm intrigued about being able to, how government and industry really came together in this whole process. What's been left on the table there in terms of how you guys see potential benefits in further integrating those relationships between government and industry?
The Talking Health Tech podcast has evolved a lot over the years. all based on audience feedback. Now I need your help. Yes, you, to shape the future of this show. Between now and the end of June, we're running our biggest campaign to date in order to understand what makes the global healthcare ecosystem tick. Last time we ran our Talking Health Tech audience survey, we learnt 40% of our audience are clinicians, 77% of our audience tune in for professional development and market awareness, 8% of people listen to Talking Health Tech for competitor profiling, and only 2% of people listen to the podcast to fall asleep. And this time around, I can't wait to find out about your preferences for audio versus video content, which topics we should dive into more, preferences for hosts and formats and geographical reach and so much more. And don't worry, we'll be sharing all the insights once all the responses are collected as well. So if you're a supporter of Talking Health Tech and you can spare 5 or 10 minutes, please complete our 2024 audience survey. And to say thanks for your input, everyone who completes the survey goes into the draw to win a share of $1,000 worth of credits towards THT Plus membership. Go to talkinghealthtech.com/survey or the links in the show notes of this episode as well.
Maybe Anish, do you want to start on that one?
Yeah, sure. So I think specifically with what we'd actually worked on with the vaccine clinic finder, the remnants of that, there are so many different applications. I'll start off there. So vaccine clinic finder transitioned to having availability of medical appointments. That's a project that Health Direct had recently commissioned for some of the private vendors, the booking vendors. And beyond vaccinations, you know, GP is a big segment of ours, and that's something that we can assist in. That was a very easy solution, similar to what Aaron was saying. The infrastructure is already in place. We have a successful integration. So really just showcasing that availability wasn't difficult for us. And, you know, that's led to more access to patients that are coming to Health Direct and now to HotDoc. And there's other elements that are a little bit more nuanced for us in terms of, you know, what some of that infrastructure is being used for now. And that's more around the delivery of urgent care. And that's an important initiative for us as well, because we have identified, along with federal and state governments and PHNs, that there are a subsegment of patients that require access to a specific type of care that doesn't necessarily align with their usual interactions with their GP. And what that means is they need a specific flow, a specific patient flow to help them see their healthcare professional in a manner that will get them immediate access. So that's been a really interesting sort of relationship that's developed as a result from the interaction between the public and private sector. And that's just one example. And, you know, in terms of the initiatives that we can potentially work on with the federal and state governments, that's, you know, it's unending. And I think Health Direct is a fantastic sort of intermediary almost that can connect the private and public health sector. And I think that's sort of a fantastic role for the future. Whether it's urgent care services or other healthcare services that we can deliver to the public, sorry, to the patients or healthcare professionals. Aaron, I'm sure you have some things to comment on that in regard as well.
Absolutely, Anisha. I think, you know, one of our great problems in healthcare is that patients don't know that they can actually access solutions for their problems. And what we know is that patients turn to Dr. Google, and then they Google all of this stuff and they get so much information, which is ultimately, the majority of it's coming from overseas. They're actually, they reach a void. And the void is, but who can help me? Like, I can try all of this stuff. And there's this point of, I've got all of this certainty and I've got all this information, and then I can't actually do anything. I think that's the bridge, which is Health Direct, and the beautiful naming of the entity is perfect. It's Health Direct. I can directly get care, and it's not just you know, the credible source of information. It is, here are people who can help you, genuine people in your local area, 2.5 kilometers away from your home, who can help you. That, as a foundation, means that we have a problem, and the problem is, how do we regain the laser focus that we had during the pandemic to get through key priorities and key initiatives that are funded, right, at a local level? It's funded by government to say, these are problems which are causing us significant economic problems in productivity, in costs to the healthcare system at the emergency ward. Here are people who can get ahead of the game and actually help you now that you know that you've got that problem. And I think that is the whatever that shape that takes. I don't have a specific example, but whatever shape that takes, we've got to start working through that laser focus of this is a problem. And that's potentially where, you know, the health direct leadership comes from. You know, it can't just be hot doc leading and med advisor leading, because we'll lead in what is best for us. It's about finding that middle ground of going, yeah, actually, this is really good for everyone if we have laser focus on these key initiatives moving forward. So it's a bit of a broader answer to the question, Sophie. However, the solution is from roundtabling and key initiatives that that the government has, and it comes through you know, the entity like Health Direct. Travis, I'm sure you've got more to add on that.
Yeah, look, in terms of the partnership with industry, I think the COVID experience was a significant growth journey for Health Direct, not only in our service model, which went from a traditional health advice model to now actually facilitating connected care, thanks to this partnership with the Booking Solutions. I think when we look towards the future and the foundations that we've developed, one of the principles that we need to continue carrying is if it exists elsewhere, we don't build it. So Health Direct's not in the game of building technology solutions, you know, in an effort to compete. That's absolutely not part of our future. Our future is the reuse of assets and the integration between systems and healthcare providers across healthcare settings to ensure that we can optimize the consumer experience. And whether that means fast-tracking access and, you know, for patients who need it most, or ensuring greater continuity of care across pathways or out of pathways, I think there's a fundamental role for industry in helping to provide the architecture and infrastructure for that particular journey. What we found really useful, even recently in the transition from the vaccine clinic finder into the service finder, was working through the future use cases. And obviously that's what we're about to discuss next, Sophie. But the future use cases, particularly around urgent care, which is not necessarily a future use case now, we're deep in the thick of it. But being able to manage or at least divert traffic to where capacity exists, and the ability, the surveillance by having access into a booking module at a particular endpoint of care does give us, through the nurse contact center, a level of assurance that we can connect patients to where care capacity exists. You know, rather than rocking up an emergency department for which you have no idea how long you'll be waiting for a particular condition, adding a triage layer that matches services scope of practice with the symptoms that a patient is presenting with gives us that ability to connect people to care that is going to respond to their needs rapidly. Some urgent care clinics have booking capacity built in. Others are purely walk-in. Some are hybrid. I think in about 12 months' time, it'll be great to evaluate which of these models are best. Whether it's a hybrid, whether it's a booking entry with a triage gate at the front door being digital or telephony, or whether the walk-in model, you know, like a traditional ED is the best approach in terms of efficiency and both in terms of technical efficiency and allocative efficiency.
So you're saying that you don't like wild elephants, mate? Is that what we're saying? That's good.
I'll let you commentate on that, Aaron.
But Travis, just on that point, actually, you know, an ask for the listeners, potentially not naming names, potentially in government organizations, let's setting aside the technology aspect. I think what we absolutely should continue to do on the back of COVID is continue to develop relations between industry and the public sector. And yes, Health Direct is a fantastic intermediary, but, you know, if the government has questions, the federal or state have questions around pharmacy or primary care, we exist. We would love to sit down and brain you know, go through some sort of workshop experience to identify future use cases or address existing problems. This is the way forward. We all have specialized knowledge. And, you know, if we do have a way that we can collaborate together, even distinctions between state and federal, that would really be the future of healthcare. And, you know, we can move as fast as we did in COVID.
Yeah. And Ish, to your point, you initially said you've got 21,000, right? 21,000 users across your network. We've got 5,800 community pharmacies across our network. I mean, if you want rapid movement and if you want efficiencies, that's where it lies. And I'm sure there's plenty other companies out there, software vendors who've got their network. And that leverage, is far more powerful, right? For the community, for people. So we don't see that one pharmacy or, you know, two pharmacies in a certain, you know, area of Australia, if they don't get the software until their software vendor actually gets it onto the roadmap and then does the integration.
Exactly.
We're talking about 6 months later that people are suffering. That's not okay. Like, we've got to move. If we want to move fast, we want to get these efficiencies out there. All those human factors are in the way if we don't use existing infrastructure.
But also on that note, Aaron, you know, if I was a government organization and I had a problem that I wanted to solve in the pharmacy landscape, who better to talk to than a network of 5,000 that has potential oversight of a 5,000 network of clinics, right? So you will have those insights.
I genuinely get, just to take a very slight tangent, I get why governments think, hang on, maybe we should build this ourselves, where we're going to get the solution that we want, like the perfect solution. You know, is it the enemy of good, though, is what, you know, Travis was saying before.
Yeah.
But, you know, the truth is, go out, if it's truly emergent, an emergent area where you go, you know what, no one else has done this.
Yeah,
there is no other solution out there, and no other vendor could actually potentially put this in there. I get it. Set the standard. You know, invest the
or
money.
Or if there are any
the
bad
standard.
Eggs.
Right. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you set the standard. You know, Microsoft did that when they said, hang on, the hardware vendors are not delivering hardware which is actually going to match our rate of change and our rate of development of software. So let's go out there and make Surface Pros, you know, and let's set the standard. But the truth is, we have a mature software community. MSIA brings all of that together. You know, it is natively an asset for the country to be able to have private companies with such maturity in both cybersecurity and, you know, development processes. I think that you know, to the point that Sophie has really started us off on around what is, you know, what are the capabilities here? It's our choice. It really is our choice, and the speed of which we can deliver, without patting ourselves on the back, just looking at this objectively, the speed of which we can deliver is actually based upon the fact that we've got that level of maturity within the community of software vendors out there. And I think through the pandemic, Health Direct saw that and went, wow, what a great asset that we could actually just leverage straight off this one. So the perfect example, you know, is what did the average person do, the average community person do to get into a pub? They got their phone out and they scanned a QR code. It wasn't that QR codes were new technology. It was existing technology that no one liked and used. But the truth is, everyone had a phone with a camera. That got us back drinking in the pub. I mean, get us back to the chicken schnitty, right? It was that aspect that we went, hang on, we've got something here we can use. We don't have to have something new. People don't have to go out and buy new infrastructure. We've got it right there. Just a similar example about what we could do.
Yeah.
So if the government wants chicken schnitty, right, and a 4x has to be a 4x, right? 4x gold, fine. But if they want that, then use us. We're the mobile phones. We're the infrastructure, which is natively available going forward. Yeah,
and we can certainly pick the native Queenslander on the on the episode today. We've got a bit of time left, so let's really dive into these use cases and what the future is. Urgent care has been dropped a couple of times. So, Anish, do you want to talk to us about what that means from your perspective?
Yeah, just building on what Travis was saying, it's a very specific appointment type that has recently gained traction because we've had a number of different government entities trying to solve the same problem. And we've realized that there is an overburden in emergency departments. And the way to do that is actually divert traffic away to a GP or another healthcare professional, if appropriate. And how you do that is by asking a number of different triage questions. So a number of times it would be, you just might need some additional information because the patient is unaware. Or it could be, you need to go to the emergency department, call an ambulance. Or it could be, okay, go. It's not as urgent as you think it is, but go see a GP in your own hours. Or this is a scenario where you should actually go see urgent care, in which case, you know, a player like HotDoc or another booking vendor would step in and provide a booking link that's configured by a specific clinic that is seeing urgent care services. That's how that would work. What that does is obviously it broadens the horizon of what a patient can do in terms of optionality when they have a specific condition that requires urgent services, and also reduces the burden on emergency department. Of course, we're doing this at a small scale. At this stage, it's not widely adopted. As Travis was saying, there's multiple iterations of the solution, and I don't think there's a specific solution that necessarily works better than others yet. We still need more data points, but in the next 12 months, we will have more of an understanding of what works and potentially, you know, scale at a level where we can address this issue at a wider scale. But that's one use case of, you know, what potentially the future looks like between a collaboration of, you know, government and private, because I don't think just a single entity can do this. This has to be sort of a combined effort for a number of different reasons, for funding, operational sort of problems that you'd need to overcome. So realistically, yeah, this is a great use case. And, you know, there are other use cases, of course, things like chronic disease management, referrals, but, you know, we'll keep that for another day. But yeah, I'll let Travis and Aaron comment on it if they have any other sort of areas where they see, you know, government industry can collaborate to a better future of healthcare.
Yeah, one of the projects that I'm currently delivering is pharmacist prescribing. There are pilots across the country, simple things like uncomplicated UTIs, oral contraceptive, but also it's expanding now into 18 categories of acute ailments in Queensland. So that'll kick off in the next a few weeks, actually, and we're really excited to do that. But it's again harnessing these emergent practices with a community, I guess, awareness, and then how do we then connect the awareness part to the this is the human being who can actually help me. So I agree, Anish. I think you know, sitting down and being able to understand each other's roadmaps has great effect, and also really understanding what are the problems that the government is facing. You know, what are the big challenges? How can we be, and I mean it, how can we be an asset to the government to actually get outcomes and then also use the data which is available to inform exactly how those outcomes are being, you know, are being solved, and that measurement piece is really, really important. And we haven't really spoken about it, but what are the mechanisms that we can do to say it's working? It's genuinely working, because at some point, you know, government is not going to be able to see absolutely everything. Each of one of the vendors is going to have a certain amount of information which we can share back and say, this actually gets results. This is a good news story, but more so, there are people getting benefit. There are human beings in less pain across the country, and we're going to see great economic benefits from doing that. So emergent practice is probably the key theme that I've got there. What can we do moving forward as different industries, different sectors emerge in their scope? Someone mentioned that before. What can we do to empower the community through technology connections? Travis?
Look, it's no secret that Health Direct is continuing to evolve and mobilise resources to become this trusted virtual front door to the healthcare system for consumers. You know, more than 5.5 million triages a year, every year, even since COVID. More than 9 million calls through the various contact centres that are operated by Health Direct means it's a trusted source of information and connection to services. What we'd really like to do is continue to work with industry and governments to identify use cases that are going to improve the consumer experience. So really focus on what are the learnings through the service finder, the transitioning of that capability to support general access to primary care. We've already done that together for COVID. We've now done it for general practice, short and long appointments, mental health care planning, urgent care now becoming a core part of that enduring infrastructure. I wouldn't be surprised if in, say, 2 years' time, some of this capability has become even more routine for searching, finding, accessing, and maintaining appointments across the broader healthcare system. So not just primary care, which is the sole setting for which it's currently supporting. I know that there's a couple of jurisdictions which have some appetite for leveraging this kind of capability into their specialist outpatient areas and more broadly into the mental health sector in community-based programs. I think urgent care is a great space for this phase one evolution of the product. I think the evaluation of this particular use case will definitely inform further expansion into the future.
Great. Thank you. I feel like we could sit here and talk all day. You guys have some wonderful insights, and it's been a great collaboration, and to see how you all interact is a testament to how well and how successful I think the collaboration has been between the three of you. We might leave it there for today. Do any of you have any sort of closing takeaways that you want to leave with our audience before we finish, and look forward to doing this again in 12 months' time?
The only thing that I'd add is a successful future comes about from great communication. And as long as we all continue to get around that round table, we all use the community that's glued together by MSIA, I think that we do have great opportunity. It's the point that we start going back to silos, and we don't have linking pins between all of our organisations. And Travis and I speak, and Christian and I speak, and I'm sure that's the same with you, Anish, and Health Direct. But if we can get that collaborative approach back that we have had throughout COVID, we will be able to genuinely move mountains. It's when we have a competitive environment which actually doesn't result in any better outcomes for our users and for patients. That's when everyone loses. So I think moving forward, great communication and a sense of I'm seeking to understand approach and a culture in our software community is a critical aspect about it, because there is a lot of the problem of health and pain from patients. The pie is very big. There's no need to compete in this area. It is more around how do we actually get the best outcomes for our patients through our health carers, and that's what they care about.
Yeah, absolutely. And just on that note, Aaron, absolutely adding an element of proactive communication as well. And it doesn't necessarily have to be within our particular silos. It could be external to that. On that note, building those relationships outside of what just we see as a direct operational partner might actually lead to potential problems that we don't actually realize exist yet. And I think that's what the future needs to work towards. And, you know, part of what we've discussed before is having those workshop sessions together as a unit, and could be a very easy start. And, you know, that just might be an introduction to party XYZ. And, you know, that's how good conversations and good projects and relationships start.
I think also, you know, the interest-based kind of negotiation approach that we take to all of the projects that we've worked on in the last couple of years, certainly since I've been at Health Direct, what I've appreciated from industry and the clinical peak bodies has been authentic but respectful engagement. So it's really important to mean what you say and say what you mean, but in a way that's respectful and engaging and keeps us at the table together, so that we can have this enduring coalition of support in achieving health reform.
Thank you, Travis. All of you for your time today. It's been really insightful, and I look forward to seeing what the future holds.
Super. Thanks for organising, Sophie, and lovely to chat, Aaron and Travis.
You too, Anish.
Great to see you both.
Great to see you guys. Thanks,
see you later.
Hey, thanks for sticking around to the end of this episode. If you made it this far, you're the perfect person that I want to hear from. Our THT Plus audience survey is now open until the end of June, and I personally read every submission. In fact, if you leave a comment in the survey that you heard this promotion in a podcast episode, I promise I'll reply directly to you by email with a personal note of thanks, and I'll even buy you a coffee next time I see you in person. It's pretty easy. Just go to talkinghealthtech.com/survey and have your say.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Talking Health Tech. Make sure you like and subscribe and share this episode with someone who might find it valuable. For more information and resources about healthcare innovation, visit talkinghealthtech.com.